Welcome to the Verity Podcast for Thursday, March 28th, 2024. We're the only podcast that's separating the fact from the narrative spin. I'm Adam Clark.
And I'm Eric Steiner with a look at today's top stories. A top Hamas political leader visits Iran.
Another opposition candidate is barred from Venezuela's election.
Belarus's leaders' claims undermine Putin's statements on the Moscow attack.
President Xi hosts key U.S. business leaders in Beijing.
Australia and Tuvalu ink a climate security and migration pact.
The Thai parliament passes a same-sex marriage bill.
Donald Trump gets issued a gag order in his hush money trial.
While Trump's Truth Social stock begins trading.
New polling shows President Biden gaining in six battleground states.
And a report says AI could bleed 8 million jobs out of the UK.
In our top story, a Hamas political leader visits Iran. Here are the facts as agreed upon by France 24, Times of Israel, Strat News Global, Dawn, Haaretz, and Al Jazeera. Ismail Haniyeh, the leader of Hamas's political bureau, on Tuesday met with Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian, making it Haniyeh's second visit to Tehran since Hamas launched its October 7th attack. At a joint press conference, the group's Qatar-based leader claimed that Israel faces, quote, unprecedented political isolation and is losing political backing in the UN Security Council, or UNSC, with the U.S., quote, unable to impose its will on the international community. Haniyeh's remarks follow the recent UNSC resolution, which passed with a U.S. abstention calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Iran has also provided Hamas with material support. Accompanied by a Palestinian delegation, Haniyeh also met with Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who praised what he called the, quote, unique resistance of the Palestinian forces against Israel. Haniyeh last visited Iran in November to meet with Khamenei. Also on Tuesday, Israel reportedly recalled some members of its negotiating delegation from Qatar, arguing that Hamas was, quote, not interested in continuing negotiations after the group rejected Tel Aviv's latest U.S. brokered proposal for a hostage deal. Haniyeh's Iran trip comes as Israel's military confirmed Tuesday that Hamas deputy military commander Marwan Issa was killed in an Israeli attack in central Gaza in early March. Hamas responded that there was no evidence of Issa's death.
Thank you, Eric, for the facts on our first story today. The spins are going to start with an anti-Israel narrative, and it's provided by AL Monitor. It's no secret that Iran and Hamas maintain close ties and are united in the fight against Israel's brutal war in Gaza. The fact that the U.S. changed course by not vetoing this recent UN resolution in favor of an immediate ceasefire indicates that Israel now has its back against the wall. Moreover, Tel Aviv has failed to achieve any of its military objectives in Gaza, even after 6 months of heavy fighting. Hamas will not be defeated, and Haniyeh's trip to Tehran underlines the reality that the resistance will continue until Israel ends its bloody campaign.
The pro-Israel narrative comes from Times of Israel. Haniyeh's trip confirms that the Hamas terrorists can rely on the Iranian regime's continued support following their unprecedented attack on October 7th. Hamas continues to demonstrate that it has no real interest in peace, rejecting the Israeli proposal for a hostage deal and truce. Hamas feels strengthened by the fact that the U.S. did not veto the anti-Israel Security Council resolution. However, despite Washington's historic failure motivated by domestic politics, Israel will not be deterred in its legitimate struggle to free the hostages and combat terror.
And the nerds are going to jump on board on our first story today. They've got a narrative that says that there's a 67% chance that Israel will have de facto power in the Gaza Strip on January 1st of 2025. That's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. News out of Venezuela, where another opposition candidate has been barred from election. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Al Jazeera, Associated Press, BBC News, and Barron's. Venezuela's main opposition coalition, Plataforma Unitaria Democratica, or the PUD, announced Tuesday that its candidate to run against incumbent President Nicolas Maduro, Corina Yores, were blocked from registering for the July 28th election. The 80-year-old former academic was named on Friday by the PUD to replace Maria Corina Machado, who has been banned from holding public office. Eventually, the alliance temporarily enlisted former diplomat Edmundo González Urrutia as its candidate. This ban on Yoris was due to her not making the Monday evening registration deadline. However, the PUD posted video footage on social media, allegedly showing its repeated failed attempts to log into the Electoral Council website. Several other candidates have successfully registered to run, though none of them is seen as a serious challenger to Maduro. Asked if the opposition coalition would now support current Zulia Governor Manuel Rosales, Machado reasserted that her candidate is Corina Yoris. A newcomer to politics, Yoris was part of the PUD commission that organized opposition primaries that Machado won. Last week, two of Machado's top campaign aides were arrested and warrants were issued to seven others on claims that they have sought to destabilize the country. Following Machado's primary victory in October, which saw an estimated 2.4 million voters come out despite threats of government prosecution, the Supreme Court upheld Machado's 15-year ban for alleged corruption during her time in the National Assembly.
Adam, thank you for the facts. The first spin for this story is a pro-establishment narrative coming from Guardian. Maduro has been building a tyrannical government for over 10 years now. But this move has gone further than any other. Even Brazil and Colombia voiced their opposition to banning Yoris, emphasizing that it violates the Barbados Agreement signed by Maduro and the opposition last October. Maduro can no longer hide behind his typical claims of Western or American interference, as even his Latin American counterparts are calling his bluff.
That's going to be countered with the establishment critical narrative, and that's brought to us by World Socialist website. The PUD is a U.S. puppet that threatens Venezuela's sovereignty, so it's fully justified to block their candidates. While the U.S. has condemned Maduro for his actions, Washington is the one who suspended Venezuelan oil licenses, blocked it from selling gold, and conducted coups, which has led to 40,000 starvation-related deaths and a national exodus of 7 million Venezuelans. The U.S. wants control of Latin America resources to fund its global wars.
Metaculus says there's a 40% chance that there will be a civil war in Venezuela before 2050. News in Russia as Lukashenko undermines Putin's claim on the Moscow concert hall attack. Here are the facts as agreed upon by CNN, Politico, and BBC News. Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko, one of the closest allies to Russia's Vladimir Putin, this week appeared to undermine claims by the Russian leader who alleged that Ukraine had a part to play in the Moscow concert hall attack on Friday. On Wednesday, the death toll stood at 139 people killed and over 350 people were reported injured. Though the Islamic State, or IS group, posted a series of video clips from inside the concert hall and claimed responsibility for the attack, Putin on Saturday alleged that Ukraine had assisted the perpetrators by preparing a, quote, window for the attackers to escape to Ukraine. In comments on Tuesday, Lukashenko said the men who are said to have attacked the Crocus concert hall were in fact first headed to Belarus before turning in the direction of Ukraine. Lukashenko said, "We placed our units on high alert to prepare for a combat situation. As a result, they were unable to enter Belarus by any means. Recognizing this, they diverted their course and headed toward the Ukrainian-Russian border." Lukashenko added that he spoke to Putin by phone several times in the wake of the attack and that the pair of them did not sleep for the first 24 hours as they dealt with the threat. He added that he was making these details public because some had criticized Putin for not making his first public remarks on the attack until more than 19 hours after it began. Meanwhile, in spite of Lukashenko's comments, Russian officials doubled down on the allegation that Ukraine assisted the attackers. Alexander Bortnikov, a top Russian spy chief, alleged that, quote, "the action was prepared both by the radical Islamists themselves and obviously facilitated by Western special services. Ukraine's special services themselves have a direct connection to this."
Thank you, Eric. The spin's going to start with a pro-establishment narrative provided by Politico. The comments of Lukashenko directly contradict the claims of Putin that Ukraine somehow facilitated this attack. Not only has this been vehemently rejected by Ukraine and the U.S., but IS itself has claimed responsibility. All the evidence points to them being the perpetrators in this case.
TASS has the pro-Russian narrative. The U.S. has backed itself into a corner by jumping the gun to proclaim that IS is responsible. How can U.S. officials talk with the media within 24 hours of the attack with absolute certainty as to who and who was not to blame, especially as Russia's investigation to determine the facts is ongoing? This alone is incriminating, notwithstanding IS ties to Western intelligence.
And the nerds think that there's a 50% chance that Vladimir Putin will cease hold to the office of president of Russia by February of 2029. And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. President Xi meets with U.S. business leaders. Here are the facts as agreed upon by CNA, CNBC, Associated Press, Al Jazeera, and Voice of America. Chinese President Xi Jinping met with roughly 20 American business leaders in Beijing on Wednesday as China looks to boost economic growth by promoting foreign direct investment. Investment shrank 8% in 2023 due to multiple concerns over tensions between Beijing and Washington. The meeting was described as a follow-up to Xi's November dinner with U.S. executives that followed his meeting with U.S. President Joe Biden. The executives were allegedly in Beijing for the state-organized China Development Forum, which took place on Sunday and Monday. The world's second-largest economy has struggled to fully recover from the COVID pandemic, and deteriorating relations with the U.S. have exacerbated issues. Xi stressed mutually beneficial economic ties between the two countries, despite U.S. tariffs and geopolitical tensions. Xi sought to quell the concerns of U.S. businesses who fear that secret espionage and strict state laws make China hostile towards foreign firms. He also used the opportunity to highlight the PRC's economic growth and improving relations with the U.S. Organized by the National Committee on U.S.-China Relations, the U.S.-China Business Council, and the Asia Society, the meeting lasted 90 minutes. The U.S.-China Business Council, quote, stressed the importance of rebalancing China's economy, in addition to other concerns. High-ranking leaders from Blackstone, Qualcomm, Bloomberg, and FedEx attended the meeting, which comes a week after Beijing announced rules that eliminate government oversight of foreign information sharing that isn't categorized as so-called important data.
Adam, thanks for the facts. The first spin is a pro-China narrative coming from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. President Xi's meeting with American business leaders on Monday was a great success and a positive development for strengthened relations between the world's two largest economies. Political differences between two great nations will always exist, but they cannot be allowed to derail mutually beneficial relations that impact the entire world. President Xi is attentive and receptive to the concerns of foreign governmental and business leaders, and Beijing is willing to cooperate to foster a stronger global economy.
That's going to be countered with the anti-China narrative provided by the Heritage Foundation. Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party are desperate to revive the PRC's struggling economy, as they recognize that their totalitarian policies have caused the current predicament. In order to reach its goal of 5% gross domestic product growth in 2024, China will need to increase foreign investment, which fell drastically last year. This won't be easy, with many governments and businesses hesitant to deal in a country that has become a global antagonist with an unrestrained ruling party. Xi will try to ease global concerns, but he has already done too much damage to China's economy.
The nerds from Metaculous say there's a 55% chance that China's GDP will exceed the United States' GDP in any year before 2041. Our next story coming from Australia, as Tuvalu accepts a climate, migration, and security agreement. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Guardian, Barron's, Islands Business, and Nature World News. On Tuesday, Australia's Pacific Minister Pat Conroy informed Parliament that the newly elected Tuvaluan administration had chosen to move forward with the climate and security migration deal. Prime Minister Feletti Tau said the agreement that was announced in November lacked consultation rights and safeguards for Tuvalu's sovereignty. The controversy centers around a provision that Australia can veto any security arrangement Tuvalu makes with a third party. Since then, Tau has joined the cause and given the green light to the Philippi Union. According to Conroy, quote, respect and support for each other's sovereignty are at the heart of the agreement. The deal lets 280 Tuvaluans move to Australia every year and protects Tuvalu's sovereignty even if sea levels rise due to climate change. Upon request, Australia agrees to help Tuvalu in the event of a natural disaster, a pandemic, or a military attack. Tuvalu has been a focus since February when Nauru developed diplomatic ties with Taiwan and turned to Beijing. Taiwan, China, the U.S., and Australia paid special attention to Tuvalu's general election, as the country is one of Taiwan's three remaining Pacific allies. Climate change-catalyzed sea level rise is a threat to the island nation. Extreme weather, such as more frequent cyclones and storm surge events, are also hazards to Tuvalu's sensitive ecosystem.
Narrative A spin on this story is brought to us by Islands Business. The Felipili Union is a historic agreement. Both Tuvalu and Australia benefit. On one hand, it will allow Tuvaluans to migrate gradually and with dignity, as the Pacific Island nation is at risk of disappearing due to climate change. On the other hand, this three-part integration initiative marks a significant victory for Canberra in its efforts to keep Beijing at bay in the region.
Global Times gives us narrative B. Australia has long been the bully in the South Pacific, acting as the manager of the U.S. in what they perceive as the country's backyard and treating island nations as vassal states with a colonialist mentality. This treaty with Tuvalu is just the latest attempt to protect its hegemonic system, while more constructive actors in a multipolar world, like China, seek to ramp up cooperation and economic exchange in Oceania.
And the nerds think that there's a 50% chance that the sea level rise in 2100 will be at least 591 millimeters. And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. Thai Parliament has passed a same-sex marriage bill. Here are the facts as agreed upon by BBC News, France 24, Associated Press, and Guardian. Thailand's parliament on Wednesday passed a same-sex marriage bill, bringing the country closer to becoming the only Southeast Asian country to recognize same-sex unions. The bill, which passed 399-10 in the lower house, must now pass the Senate and be approved by the king before it becomes law. The bill would update the country's civil and commercial code by changing the words men and women and husband and wife to individuals and marriage partners, effectively granting LGBTQ couples legal, medical, and financial rights to heterosexual couples. Legislation regarding same-sex marriage has been discussed in Thailand for at least 10 years. In 2020, Thailand's Constitutional Court ruled that although the country's marriage law only recognized heterosexual marriage as constitutional, rights should be expanded. Across Asia, Taiwan and Nepal have equal marriage laws, and India's parliament is set to deliberate on the issue in October.
Adam, thanks for the facts. The first spin is narrative A coming from Al Jazeera. This history-making vote brings Thai society one step closer to an equal society for all people. Legalizing same-sex marriage reduces social disparity across the nation and will benefit all Thai people, setting an example for other Asian countries.
Time is going to follow that up with a narrative B. Although this is an impressive step toward legalizing same-sex marriage in Thailand, this bill isn't a law yet. Thailand is fairly tolerant, but it's still a conservative country. And the success of this bill is not set in stone, and the cultural context must be accounted for.
The nerds from Metaculous are going to chime in for this story as well. They say there's a 50% chance that at least 20% of the world's population will live in countries where same-sex marriage is legal in 2032. Donald Trump has been issued a gag order in his hush money trial. The facts are agreed upon by New York Times, Reuters, The Hill, ABC News, and USA Today. Former President Donald Trump on Tuesday was issued a limited gag order by a New York judge in the case accusing Trump of paying hush money to cover up a sex scandal during the 2016 presidential election. Under this order, Trump is forbidden from speaking about witnesses' roles in the case and commenting on court staff, prosecutors, and their families if those comments will interfere with the case. Trump, however, is permitted to comment on Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg. In issuing the order, Justice Juan Merchan explained that Trump's previous public statements in this and other cases have been, quote, threatening, inflammatory, and denigrating, and the gag order is meant to secure the orderly administration of the case. In a post on Truth Social, social media platform, Trump called the gag order vicious and unconstitutional because it violates his First Amendment rights to speak out against what he called the weaponization of law enforcement against him. Trump last April pleaded not guilty to 34 counts related to his alleged falsifying of business records related to hush money payments through his lawyer Michael Cohen to adult film actress Stormy Daniels. The trial is scheduled to begin April 15th. Previously, Trump, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee, faced gag orders in two other cases, his New York civil fraud trial and the federal case accusing him of interfering in the certification of the 2020 presidential election results.
Thanks for the facts, Eric. The spins are going to start with the pro-Trump narrative provided by Fox News. This anti-American gag order is dangerous because it violates the First Amendment rights of a candidate for the presidency to defend against potentially politically motivated criminal charges. Even the gag order seems politically motivated because it only restricts Trump's speech, but the witnesses against him are permitted to continue commenting.
We follow that with an anti-Trump narrative coming from Newsweek. This gag order should be applauded because it'll keep people who are just doing their jobs related to this case from being put in the crosshairs by Trump's violence-inspiring rhetoric. In addition to holding him accountable for his crimes, he should have to face the music over his insults and threats that endanger so many people by making them targets for his supporters.
Well, the nerds think that there's a 50% chance that Trump will be convicted of a felony before 2024. And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. Truth Social stock starts trading. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Wall Street Journal, Al Jazeera, Fox News, BBC News, and Washington Post. Former President Donald Trump's social media company, Truth Social, hit the stock market on Tuesday under the ticker symbol DJT, with shares jumping as high as 59% and closing 16% higher than their initial price on its first day of trading. Despite the company suffering $10.6 million in operating losses through the first 9 months of last year, Tuesday's stock surge put shares at a high of $79.38 before closing at $57.99, launching its market capitalization toward $8 billion. Based on Trump's roughly 58% stake in the company, or 80 million shares, his personal share value rose to almost $4 billion before the stock launch and even higher later Tuesday. Truth Social, which claims to have 8.9 million users, went public via a merger with a shell company specifically built to buy companies and take them public, known as an SPAC. DJT merged with an SPAC company called Digital World Acquisition Corp. The merger seemed to help DJT gain value, especially compared to other social media companies that generate tens of millions of users and hundreds of millions in annual revenue. This comes as Trump is due to pay a $175 million New York civil fraud bond in 10 days. His current merger contract prohibits him from selling his stock for 6 months, but the company's board could vote to allow an earlier cash out.
Adam, thank you for the facts. The first spin for this story is an anti-Trump narrative coming from Washington Post. Those who bought this meme stock, whether they're real investors or just Trump supporters, and ignored Trump's history of using his failed businesses as a tool to cash out at the expense of his supporters and pay off his legal bills, are in for a surprise. DJT shares will plummet once the nefarious scheme is over.
New York Post is going to provide us with a pro-Trump narrative. The former president has pulled off a brilliant last-minute victory in the face of unrelenting ire of New York's corrupt legal system. While he still faces many other uphill legal battles, as well as a closing deadline to actually pay off his civil trial bond, this news is certainly a cause for celebration for Trump and his campaign.
The nerds from Metaculous say there's a 50% chance that Trump's net worth will be at least $2.42 billion this year. According to the recent polls, Biden gains on Trump in six battleground states. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Bloomberg, The Hill, Morning Consult Pro, and Axios. A Bloomberg News Morning Consult poll has shown President Joe Biden advancing against Republican rival Donald Trump in six of seven key swing states. Biden has trailed in national and battleground state polls for roughly the past 5 months. While Biden is still trailing overall, the poll suggests he's narrowed the gap, especially in Michigan and Pennsylvania, where the two candidates are tied at 45%. Data shows he has come within 2 points in Nevada while taking a 1-point lead in Wisconsin, where Trump led by 4 points last month. Trump still leads 47% to 43% nationally, with a majority of those who'd favored Nikki Haley saying they now intend to vote for Trump. Meanwhile, 69% of voters in the seven swing states say they support higher taxes on billionaires and those earning more than $400,000 per year. Polling followed Biden's March 7th State of the Union address, though responses showed voters remain pessimistic about the economy and that Trump has maintained leads of 5 points or more in Arizona, North Carolina, and Georgia. Earlier reports had suggested that U.S. voters are not particularly keen on a Biden-Trump contest, with trends suggesting that the election will once again be a tight match. Nearly half of Biden's voters say that their decision is more about stopping Trump than positively supporting Biden, while less than 30% of Trump supporters say that their top priority is preventing a second Biden term.
Thank you, Eric. PJ Media's got something to say about this. They're going to throw out a Republican narrative. Donald Trump continues to lead Joe Biden in the vast majority of polls, both nationally and in key swing states, as voters across America wake up to Biden's terrible record on the economy, immigration, and national security. While the Democrat-allied media will attempt to generate some enthusiasm for Biden by claiming that he is catching up to Trump, the truth remains that the Democrats' only hope in November is to engage in more shenanigans. The people are tired, and there's no way Joe Biden will win if there's a fair election.
We're going to follow that up with a Democratic narrative coming from Intelligencer. Joe Biden's re-election path may appear difficult, but several factors play in his favor, not least improvements in the economy and the Democratic Party's performance in the recent elections. Most importantly, Trump is still facing a litany of legal issues that are yet to be resolved. Voters' social desirability bias is bound to play against Trump, especially if he is convicted of any of the many cases he's battling right now.
Eric, the nerds think that there's a 61% chance that a debate will be held between Joe Biden and Donald Trump before the 2024 U.S. presidential election. And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. Our final story today comes from a report that says an AI apocalypse could remove nearly 8 million UK jobs. Here are the facts as agreed upon by IPPR, AI News, and Sky News. A report by the Institute of Public Policy Research, or the IPPR, claims that in a worst-case scenario, 7.9 million UK jobs could be lost to artificial intelligence, with no impact on gross domestic product in a second wave of job replacement. The report, titled Transformed by AI, Technological Advancements Are Described as a Double-Edged Sword, as the IPPR advocates for preparations to begin concerning the integration of generative AI into everyday aspect of knowledge work. In comparison to the report's worst-case scenario, the IPPR predicts a central case of 4.4 million jobs lost, with 6.3% GDP growth at £144 billion per year, roughly $182 billion U.S. dollars, and a best-case scenario of no job losses with a 13% GDP boost of £306 billion per year. Roughly $386 billion U.S. dollars per year. While these projections concern a future era of AI implementation, the report warns that a current first wave has placed back office, entry-level, and part-time jobs at risk, mostly affecting women and younger generations. The report found that 11% of tasks labeled as so-called routine cognitive or organizational and strategic are vulnerable to AI replacement, but this could increase to 59% in the second wave, which could include higher earning jobs. A spokesperson for the UK's Department for Science, Innovation and Technology called the paper hugely speculative and said that the UK government, Innovate UK, and the Alan Turing Institute will publish guidance on the core AI skills people need later this year.
Thanks, Adam. Narrative A is the first spin coming from Yahoo Finance. While AI hype has catalyzed stock values for big tech, lower and middle class blue and white collar workers are at danger. Regulation must be passed to ensure that if a major workplace revolution occurs, those left in the dust are looked after. If not, societal divisions will exponentially increase for the worse.
Spin's going to continue with the narrative B provided by Guardian. To the disappointment of many 20th century dystopian fantasists, technology is not here to take over the world. It's likely AI will merely ease the load of repetitive workforce tasks that have historically degraded the role of humans to soulless machines in the workforce. Many sectors of the job market are irreplaceable and rely on emotional nuances that technology will never be able to replicate.
The nerds say there's a 20% chance that an AI will be able to work as a competent cook in an arbitrary kitchen before January 1st of 2030. That's coming from Metaculous. Thanks for listening to the Verity Podcast for Thursday, March 28th, 2024.
Each day we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team that extracts both the key facts that all articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
Find out more at Verity.news and download the Verity app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Adam Clark, I'm Eric Steiner, inviting you to join us next time on the Verity Podcast. We'll be right back.